Technorama episode 542, Something in the Way.
Good morning, folks. This is your captain speaking.
Technorama.
Remember when?
Technorama.
On this day in tech history.
Tech.
And now, the news.
Tech.
What the chuck?
Technorama.
Welcome to Blockhead Video.
There's a little black spot on the sun today. Where did it come from?
Over there, in the media corner.
Technorama.
Hold my beer and watch this.
Unfasten your seatbelts and disregard all safety rules. Here your flight crew, Chuck and Craig.
It's the same old thing as yesterday.
Yeah. That's right. Actually, I messed up. I forgot to finish writing the title. Something in the Way She Moves. That's what I should put.
I got it. Hey, welcome to Technorama. This is the show that takes a lighthearted look at tech, science, sci-fi, and all things geek. If you are new to Technorama, well, thank you for joining us. And if you are returning, welcome back. We appreciate you giving us your time. My name is Chuck Tomasi here at one half of the Binary Studios in sunny Phoenix, Arizona. And joining me right over there on the other camera or microphone is Craig Stepp. How are you, Craig?
I'm great. And I'm ready to get my podcast on like Donkey Kong.
That almost rhymes.
That's about all the rhyming you're going to get out of me.
Lisa showed me something on Facebook the other day. It said, easy peasy lemon squeezy, to which I say, hard lemon hard.
hard lemon hard. Oh, you're so witty.
I love it. Sometimes things just catch you from the left side. I go, well, yeah, that is funny. All right. We told them what the show is about. What do you say we get started on it?
Let's do it, man. All right. Ready.
First thing up is our history. I love this part. On this day in history for August 22nd, 2018, this is the 234th day of the year in the Gregorian calendar. There are 131 days remaining in 2018. It was on this date in 1770 that James Cook names and lands on Possession Island. I think he took possession of it. And claims the east coast of Australia for Britain as New South Wales.
But wait, it was also on this date in 1780 that James Cook's ship, HMS Resolution, returns to England, Cook having been killed on Hawaii during the voyage.
Wah, wah.
Too many
he got dances. He got cooked.
Yeah.
August 22nd, 1849 is the first air raid in history. Austria launches pilotless balloons against the city of Venice.
And the first America's Cup is won by the yacht America. No surprise there. On this date in 1851.
Maybe that's why it's called the America's Cup. I don't know. Coincidence? I don't think so. On August 22nd, 1864, 12 nations signed the first Geneva Convention.
And also on this date in 1902, Cadillac Motor Company is founded.
Not only that, but it was on the same date in 1902 that Theodore Roosevelt becomes the first president of the United States to make a public appearance in an automobile. Could it have been a Cadillac?
Maybe. On going from the ground to the sky, it was 55 years ago today that the X-15 Flight 91 reaches the highest altitude of the X-15 program. 107.96 kilometers, which is 67 miles, or 354,200 feet.
That's a long way up.
Ladies and gentlemen, please fasten your seatbelts. We're at 67 miles.
You can't breathe, just wait.
That's 10 times what a commercial airliner will fly on a good day.
It's also the 67 miles is about my commute to my old job and back.
I think how long that took. You'd have to drive to that plane. Also today in 2006, Grigori Perelman is awarded the Fields Medal, for his proof of the Poincaré conjecture, I think, in mathematics, but he refuses to accept a medal.
Yeah, no, I don't want it.
That's good. I told him we already got one.
Yeah, that's right. All right. So happy birthday on this date goes out to French physicist and mathematician developed the pressure cooking. He developed pressure cooking. Dennis Papin, born on this date in 1647.
So we can link the Boston Marathon bombing back to him.
I was thinking the Instapot.
English, which is different than a neti pot or chamber pot. English engineer.
Speaking of pressure. But
Henry Maudslay was born 247 years ago today.
And James Hillier, the Canadian-American scientist, co-designed the electron microscope. He was born 103 years ago today.
Very nice. Ray Bradbury, American science fiction writer and screenwriter, was born that same date in 1920.
And brace yourself, kids. Another Russian name. Born August 22nd, 1929. Russian anthropologist. Anthropologist and author Valery Alexiev.
Alexiev. That's one of the easier ones we've had. Also turning 86 today is American engineer, colonel, and astronaut Gerald P. Carr.
And American general engineer Norman Schwarzkopf Jr. was born 84 years ago today.
Also turning 18 years today. No, turning 82. That means he's still alive. Okay, good. German roller coaster designer and engineer. He designed the Maverick roller coaster, Werner Stengel.
English physicist and academic Roger Cashmore was born on this date in 1944.
Doesn't that just sound like the lead singer of some band, Roger Cashmore?
Actually, Cashmore, that was a Led Zeppelin song, wasn't it?
No, that's Cashmere. Wow. Just kidding. Nice. Oh, jeez. The same date in 1947. American actress and producer Cindy Williams. You know what she was? Shirley from Laverne and Shirley.
That's right. Okay. English singer-songwriter, guitarist, and producer Roland Orzabal. Orzabal is 57.
Tears for Fears.
Yes.
American R&B soul singer James DeBarge was also born in the state in 1963. I think that might be near the end of our music. Hold on.
Whoa.
We got time for the listener birthdays. August 22nd is three birthdays. What about Zoidberg? Born in 1967. Kyle Slingo, also on the 22nd. Alchemy Dragon. He's our third, rounding out the 22nd. On the 24th, we have Kira Fiore, Crazy Joe, and Christine's daughter. Ta-da! And make sure you buy her something nice this year, Joe. He's staying home from Dragon Con for her birthday.
Aww.
25th is David Grizzly Smith from Grizzly Growls Podcast. We're going to have to make sure that's still valid. A lot of these podcasts have been enlisted 10 years or so, are now faded.
And speaking of faded.
Faded, yeah. The 27th, Chuck's Forgotten iPod. I think that was the first iPod I ever bought, is on the birthday calendar.
Well, see, wow. I think you need to go format that line and put a strike through on the forgotten part, because we remember it.
We didn't forget it, yeah. And that's the way it was on this day in history for August 22nd, 2018. Take us out, band. Hey, if you want to get your name on the birthday calendar, you can go over to chuckchat.com/wiki, and we will give you a shout out like we did my almost forgotten iPod every year.
Wiki, wiki.
All right, we have news.
Bad news, everyone.
Well, this is a bit of bad news because we're still not sure what's happened to this wonderful piece of equipment. This is from...
But you can't be too... Hey, you can't be too sad for it.
No, because it was... What was it? A 9-month mission? It was something... 90-day mission? It was something crazy. Yeah. And we've gotten years and years and years out of this thing. It's insane. I'm waiting for this...
iPod.
Ad was inappropriate. Not interested in this ad. We'll try not to show that ad again.
It was Chuck's forgotten iPad. Look how much.
No. 2 months have passed since NASA's Opportunity Mars rover last phoned home. I had a big sandstorm up there. The last time we reported on the rover was June 12th, when it was trying to survive an intensifying dust storm that was deemed, quote, much worse than a 2007 storm that Opportunity weathered, according to NASA. The previous storm had an opacity level, or tau, somewhere above 5.5. This new storm had an estimated tau of 10.8. Space.com reports on Opportunity's current status. Opportunity hasn't made a peep since June 10th, when the dust of the red planet's air got so thick, How thick was it? It was so thick that the solar-powered rover couldn't recharge its batteries. Opportunity's handlers think the six-wheeled robot has put itself into a sort of hibernation, and they still hope to get a ping once the dust storm has petered out. And there are some good reasons for the optimism. NASA's officials said, because the batteries were relatively good and healthy before the storm, there's not likely to be too much degradation, NASA officials wrote in Opportunity's update Thursday, August 16th. And because the dust storms tend to warm the environment, and the 2018 storm happened as Opportunity's location on Mars entered summer, the rover should have stayed warm enough to survive. Engineers are trying to communicate with Opportunity several times a week using NASA's Deep Space Network. This is the Deep Space Network. Stay tuned for this hit from Mars.
This is DSN.
All right. The DSN is a system of big radio dishes around the globe. They hail the robot during the scheduled wake up times.
Wake up.
And then listen for a response. 5 more minutes, Earth. team Snooze. Members are casting a wider... That's how computers talk, you know.
Yeah.
Doesn't everybody do this? Is it just me?
It's just you.
When you write like a protocol that goes between two machines, hello, how are you? I'm fine. Get off my back. I didn't receive your last transmission. Oh, well, listen closer next time.
Sometimes we can't share the protocol that I share with my computer.
So it's up there. It's been running. They are getting their money's worth, and we will keep you apprised of any further updates. We love our Mars science. What else do we love, Craig?
Yeah, I'm surprised.
Yeah. Well, go ahead.
I know that they're really good at wringing out the last little bit of energy out of the device, but why not like come on every once in a while and like turn some wipers on to clear off the solar panels and check and see if it should wake up and if it shouldn't?
The wipers on the solar panels require energy, and they're conserving energy so that it can go to sleep and come back.
No. What I'm saying is, have it wake up.
Yes.
Wipe them off. See if it can get enough power, recharging. If it can't, then just go back to sleep.
But it has to wait until the dust storm is over. I'm guessing the motors that would run some wipers cans of compressed air.
Or even have some sensors that come on and check to see it I'm sure they do that, at certain intervals and go, okay, is it still okay? Is it still a bad time to wake up, and go back to sleep?
Wakey, wakey, eggs and bakey.
Hey, even have wipers on the the solar panels?
No.
How do they clean them off?
The wind.
Why wouldn't they do that? Just have something to just...
I don't know. I didn't design it. It's a matter of weight and energy, and there's lots of stuff to account for. Now, fortunately, Curiosity doesn't suffer from this problem. Do you know why?
Why? Do tell.
It's nuclear powered.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Haha. So there, it's going to last for
millennia.
That's
why it stays warm. Yeah, that's why it stays warm. Yeah, seriously, that's why it stays warm in the cold, because it's got a little bit of... I saw, Mark Watney. He went and dug up the thing, the radiation. The
Pathfinder, I think he dug up.
No. He went and got the, what was it, the battery, he dug that up first. Remember, got that out... So he could keep himself warm without turning the heater on. The radiation, the plutonium, or not plutonium, Craig, but the nuclear.
Craig, The Martian was not a documentary.
Sort of. It's a document. It's a documentary on what hasn't happened yet.
Right. It's a documentary on creative thinking.
Yeah.
So you're a Linux fan.
I am. I've been a Linux fan. Actually, I was just thinking about this the other day. I think I've been using Linux for about 20 years.
25 years. It's slightly younger by a few days than my oldest daughter.
Yeah, 25 years. Yeah, isn't that funny?
That's nuts.
Well, wait a minute. Actually, Linux is a little bit older than this.
Yes, it is. It is.
So, I've been a Linux user since around 98. I want to say about 98. And so this is really awesome. I never really used Debian so much I haven't used it as much as some of its offshoots like Ubuntu and other distros that have come in its wake. but Debian's one of the big ones. And Debian is one of the most important open source projects ever. The Debian Linux operating system is extremely popular in its own right, but also it has been used as the base for countless other distributions. Ubuntu, for instance, as I just mentioned, one of the most used distros is Debian based. Even Linux Mint, which is another offshoot of Ubuntu, which is also from Debian, not to mention Raspbian, the official Raspberry Pi OS, which I'm sure you're familiar with.
Yes.
Which is also Debian based. Today, Debian is celebrating, and I'm not sure, on the 16th, celebrating, it's a very important milestone, a 25th birthday. Yes, it is seriously that old. It is its development was announced August 16th, 1993. Hell, most of the current users weren't even born then.
Most of the current developers probably weren't born then.
That's kind of sad, isn't it? Or to think of. Anyway, yeah. When the late Ian Murdoch announced 25 years ago in comp.os.linux.development, and that's the news groups for all you guys that don't know.
Remember Usenet? Yeah.
Remember when? the imminent completion of a brand new Linux release, the Debian Linux release. Nobody would have expected that Debian Linux release would become nowadays known as the Debian Project, which is one of the largest and most influential software projects. Its primary project is Debian, the free operating system OS for your computer, as well as plenty of other systems which enhance your life. From the inner workings of your nearby airport to your car entertainment system.
Your car entertainment cistern.
and from cloud servers hosting your favorite websites to the IoT devices that communicate with them, which I'm sure you can appreciate, Chuck.
Yep.
Debian can power it all. That's what he says. Lopez further says, today, the Debian Project is a large and thriving organization with countless self-organized teams comprised of volunteers.
What were you doing 25 years ago? Let's do a quick flashback. What were you doing for your job 25 years ago?
Let's see. Was 93?
93. Was that your video store era?
No, that would have been when I was DJing.
Okay. So you hadn't gotten into the computer field yet?
No, I had been in the computer field.
Okay.
I went into DJing, and then I got back into computer field.
Did you have, like, the long dreads?
Yeah, just like I do today.
Doing the DJ thing?
Yeah. No, I was in the computer industry or the IT field for a little while. And then, I just didn't feel right. So I ended up DJing, which is something I wanted to do. And you're going to hear all about it on my next podcast for Doctors of Podcasting.
Good. Nice hook.
But that's the next thing I'm going to talk about. Actually.
You weren't married yet.
No, I was not married.
You hadn't even met Kim yet.
No, we didn't. Yeah, we didn't get together until like 97, I think. I'm not sure. It's like 97, late 97, 98.
And then she said, get a real job. So you started exploring Linux.
Here's what happened. I'll tell you how I really got into Linux. So, I had an ISP, which John Mueller Jr. knows cause he worked there. He worked at the ISP and, I had a FreeBSD box and yeah. I had no idea about FreeBSD. I was trying my best to learn. I had another guy helping me out. I ended up setting up a mail server on a Windows box because I could understand it. And then later on...
Mistake number one.
Yeah, it was a mistake because spam started to kick in. And I couldn't filter it out fast enough on the Windows mail server. It's just... You know, the functions just weren't there. Well, nothing...
It must have been like Exchange 2.0.
Well, it wasn't Exchange, but it was, Pegasus. It was Pegasus mail server. Okay. So anyway, but it had nothing had hooks to do any, spam filtering or anything like that. Very, very light because spam wasn't really a huge problem early on. And then it blew up.
97, 98. Yeah, it was.
No, it was starting to become a problem.
We'd deal with it on the client side with things like Bayesian filters.
I know. What I'm saying is it was really starting to come up as a thing. Bayesian, all that stuff was starting to creep up. Anyway, I was like, okay, I got to ditch this Windows mail server. So I saw Red Hat Linux was coming out, and I was intrigued because, not because of just the graphical interface, but I looked at the back of the box. And I'm like, that looks pretty cool. I'm interested in trying that out. So, and it was a screenshot of KDE, which was the face of Red Hat early on. They were using KDE. And so I bought it, I installed it. I was playing with it on my own computer. It was great. I ended up installing it as a server and moving everybody's email over, which that was a pain in itself. But then I started using some other, I'm trying to remember the name of the script. I can think of it in a little bit. It was a Bezion type thing, looking for keywords, trying to filter mail. Anyway, it actually worked out pretty well. And if I'm not mistaken, my dad still has the case for that computer at his house. It's got a big Red Hat sticker on the top of the box. But anyway, so, you know, I use Red Hat. I was a big Red Hat fan for a long time, but I can certainly appreciate Debian and really all the work that goes into all these distros.
There were some other old distros back then that just aren't around anymore. What was it? Yellow Dog or?
Yellow Dog, Caldera.
Yeah.
Caldera was supposed, they were trying to make it into a friendly, user-friendly type thing.
Okay.
Just kind of, SCO screwed that up. SCO bought them.
SCO, remember SCO? Bought which one?
SCO Unix bought Caldera.
Yeah, I remember SCO because that's one of the early releases that I had was SCO Xenix. They had a Xenix and they had a Unix. Yeah.
No, they did have that. They bought Caldera and then started suing everybody, which was super unpopular because Linux was open source. Here's this closed source company that's going, hey, y'all are using some stuff that, you know, we were using. Okay, show us your code. No, you just got to trust us. And it was a whole thing about, anyway, they sued themselves out of existence for what happened.
that sounds like a good topic for Jonathan Strickland. If he hasn't already covered Santa Cruz Operation, that would be an interesting company history. The birth and death of that.
It was a big thing. Hey, SCO was big for a while.
It was huge.
Like I said, they screwed that. I think that they were having some money troubles there for a while. And when they started suing people, hoping to get some money, and some people did pay them off. But then ultimately it wasn't viable. They were trolling is what it was. But I think they were looking for an exit plan. For some reason, they were going to benefit for the company going under. Just saying. I don't know.
A lot of history.
Oh, here you go. Let me quote John Miller Jr. here. My regret was that I didn't jump on learning Red Hat when Craig was learning it. See?
You could have learned together.
You could have learned together.
You learn more when you learn together.
I love it when somebody validates me.
All right. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to take a quick break while Craig validates himself, validates his parking ticket. I'm not sure
Here he achieved.
Oh no, I'm missing an audio clip. See if that one works. There we go. We use the 10-second one. All right, be right back. Hold on to your shirts.
Take a facts-based journey through the cosmos with Astronomy Cast. Join me, Dr. Pamela Gay, and my co-host Fraser Cain, publisher of Universe Today, as we discuss not just what we know, but how we know it. Topics range from dark matter to why Pluto isn't a planet. Get your episodes today at astronomycast.com or look for us in iTunes.
This is Clinton from Comedy Forecast, and you're listening to Technorama. Shame on you.
I thought he did a higher voice when he did that one. I'm not sure.
I had him do one as the critic.
Right. Jay Sherman.
And because early on, I remember I kept thinking he sounds just like him. You know, I thought Clinton sounded like
Jay Sherman.
Jay Sherman.
Achy, he does, doesn't he?
Yeah, that's what he did. That was the clip. He said, "Achy, machy."
Yeah. You'll have to find that one. I know it's out there. Where are we? We did the news. Time for Hacks and Strange Stories.
Hacks and Strange Stories. Woo!
Okay, that didn't work.
I was trying to do the Scooby-Doo thing.
Oh, hey, this is kind of scary. You want this one, or am I taking this?
I'll let you do it, because I'm scared.
All right. This is from geekology.com. Open air urinal on bridge overlooking Seine River in Paris draws criticism. I can't.
Hey,
imagine.
You take a whiz at this.
Stupid. So, if you follow our show notes, you'll find a video that has a news report about one of the eco-friendly, no-flush, open-air urinals recently installed in Paris that are drawing criticism. This particular piece of equipment is distasteful to some residents because of its location on the bridge overlooking the Seine, where tourist boats are passing by, some guy presumably whistling La Vie en Rose. Pardon my French. Well, that just sounds like I swore, didn't it? Pardon my French.
I know.
Well, he's got his
dingling
hanging out. Some residents have complained that the bright red boxes are a blight on the picturesque streets of the city. Isn't that what they said about the Eiffel Tower first? Now, I'm not comparing the Eiffel Tower to a urinal.
Actually, I think it looks like a UPS drop-off box or something.
Drop your videotape in there. Is this red box?
I'm not going in after it.
People keep sticking their... We're losing money and... never mind. Some residents have complained the bright red boxes are blight on the streets. Others say there's something more than a little distasteful about the encouraging men to urinate right on the street, even if it's into a box. Quote, it's a little bit in the open. Some people might be uncomfortable, he said, as several boats packed with tourists float by along the Seine. Now, they can only see some guy standing there. The angle of the river is down below. So unless you know where to look and go, why?
It just looks like a guy just standing there.
Yeah, you're not going to get a peep show or anything. This isn't.
No.
Okay. Resident Francois said she was outraged by its presence, describing it as a really not very attractive. I don't recall seeing any of these. There's apparently one by Notre Dame. There's one by the river. Maybe they popped up since we were there in May.
I think that these are very recent, so yeah. I don't know that you would have seen one. You may not have seen one. But, I don't really have a problem with it because in Charlotte, there was a elevator in the parking deck I used to go to, used to park for work. And in the elevator, you would always smell urine because homeless people or drunk people, I guess, it doesn't matter, people would just go late at night, wherever they felt like they had to go. So if they had something like this, you wouldn't have that problem.
That's what they're answering, because there is a problem with public urination. And they said, well, let's make it easier. The other argument is, well, this is sexist because only the guys can relieve themselves. They're putting these up and they're for guys.
Well, it would be a little awkward for a lady to go.
Well, the argument is they have the public. I don't know if you've been to San Francisco where they're like little bathrooms complete with a sink and a toilet. And after every person comes out, it closes the door and it goes through, a 30 or 60 second rinse down cycle? Yeah. It completely flushes the place from top to bottom, walls and everything. And the next person walks in is nice and friendly. So they said, well, and we use those. There are a number of them near Notre Dame. But it was, a 15 or 20 minute wait for us to get in there. And Julie and Lisa went in as a pair, and Donna and I went in as a pair just to kind of cut down on the line a little bit. We didn't want to double our time.
Yeah. My luck, I would go in there and then I go to leave and go, oh, my phone. And I turn around and it goes to the wash cycle.
Well, somebody did leave a jacket in there. It was in the corner. It was a sopping mess, but it was.
Does it wash the entire ceiling to floor or just like the toilet area or something?
It's everything that I can tell.
Does the toilet just go
like a geyser? Old Faithful's going off again. No, but the argument is if the guys are using these public ones out in the open, there will be more room for the ladies to use the hut. I don't know. If I had seen one of these and I really had to go, I would be thinking twice about unzipping in public.
But I don't think I've ever been in a situation, maybe once in my life, where I go, I can't find a bathroom, you know, and this is a problem.
Uh-huh.
I guess everybody's different. I don't know.
It's an interesting problem.
Well, there was this one time I was playing Discs of Tron in the arcade, and I was beating the game, and my bladder was like, hey, you got to go. I was like, but I can't stop. I can't. It was rough. It was tough. I did have to run to the bathroom for that.
There are some other unsightly things in Paris. I don't know if I would pick on these as the first thing that I would go after if I was trying to beautify the city.
I don't really think it's that big a deal. I mean, yeah, it made me look a little weird. You see a guy peeing over there in one of these boxes, but
right.
I think it's better than doing it on the ground or
against a wall. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I meant.
Well,
yeah.
We don't live there and we don't have to look at it. Imagine opening your door every day and there's that box and
Remember the other option we saw about people urinating? They were painting the walls with the hydrophobic.
Yes. Well, say, there you go. Maybe the citizens will have a rebellion and paint these boxes with hydrophobic paint.
I just peed on the wall and it peed on my feet.
Again.
Yay. Again.
It happens every time. What's going on?
Again.
All right, let's give a shout out to the chat room. Who do we have? Who do you see? I've got low attendance tonight. I see John Miller Jr.
Yeah, so I see Miller Jr. And I saw my friend Fred pop in there.
Was Fred in there? We had Mike Wills earlier on. Michael King joined.
Yeah, and let's see. Oh, Philip Glover. He is went to high school with him.
So you just got your high school friends joining in.
That's right. Okay. Yeah, actually tonight is just about everybody that I know personally.
Is this the opening of a new TV show or something? Or the kids have to go to bed early for school tomorrow? What's the...
Well, can we attribute this start to tomorrow. Anything? I know around here people start going to school tomorrow. Megan Enloe, Michael King.
What? Megan was in there for a while?
Yeah.
All right.
Mike Wills.
Good on her. Thank you, everybody, for watching. We appreciate it. We do this show Sundays at 9:30 Eastern when we're around. Hey, want to also remind you, before we forget, at the end of the show, Craig and I will be at Dragon Con in Atlanta, Georgia, over Labor Day weekend. Same as we've done for the last 9 years. This will be number 10 for us. And
wait, this is the 10th year?
Yes. 2009, okay. 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18. That's 10 years.
Oh, so we got to do something to celebrate then.
Sure, why not?
Let's do a live podcast.
More of the same, only crazier. We have been doing a live show at Dragon Con since 2009. We've been doing it at Podcast Expos before that every year. So, pretty much every year since 2005, we've been doing a live show. The tradition continues. Five years ago, we joined forces with Clinton Alvord over at Comedy Forecast at comedyforecast.com. And we now call it Technorama Comedy Forecast and Friends. We are doing that again Saturday at 7:30 p.m. No, yes. No, 8:30 p.m. Sorry.
It's 8:30 p.m. in the Gallery of Six, lower level in the Hilton.
Now, the addition this year is that we are bringing our latest podcast. The topic is Trek to Dragon Con as part of the
Where's Trek. The ding?
The topic is Trek. .com. Got to get the timing right. It's been a few weeks. I'm out of practice. We are doing that one right before that. So at 7 p.m. in the Galleria 2 and 3 across the hall from the podcast room, we will be doing our topic is Trek. So two shows back to back, double feature. We hook them with the Trek stuff and we drag the audience across the hall kicking and screaming.
Come on, everybody.
If you didn't win a prize over there, we got leftovers.
That's right. I look forward to seeing you all there.
We definitely do. We're very excited about that, having two live shows. We should be getting guest passes by this point, Craig. We're working harder than most of the people who are there.
I know.
For free.
See,
this is crazy.
This is another thing that John Miller Jr. needs to participate in. He should totally be down at Dragon Con. I don't know why he's sitting here in this chat. He should be on his way to Atlanta right now.
All you have to do is find yourself a hotel room.
That's right. Yeah. Well, maybe not for next year. Next year you should be down there.
So we are doing that. We're also doing the parade. We've got a couple new people joining us in the Dragon Con parade. We are up to, I think, 11 people. We've got, we're adding the Hypnotoad to our Futurama lineup. We've got Zap Brannigan and Kiff. Yes, sir. We've got a Leela.
Yeah.
A Leela character. And the rest of the crew will be back. Zoidberg and Scruffy and Fry. And, of course, Robot Santa. And yours truly as Professor Hubert Farnsworth. Good news, everyone. Here, yes. I got to practice. Let's see.
Good news, everyone.
No,
uh-oh,
no.
I don't like the sound of that.
Let's try this one.
Oh, great news, everyone.
That's better.
Oh, great news, everyone.
So, yeah, DragonCon is coming up. Well, let's see. It's Sunday night, so we'll pretty much be done in 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Be decompressing. Yeah,
so this is be the 14th annual live Technorama show or live show.
I don't know if we have all of them in archive. Sometimes we record that. We do them live, but they didn't get recorded properly.
Well, yeah, I think a couple over the years we had to trust somebody else to record it.
We have one video recording from 06 or 07 when your laptop died under a bottle of beer.
We won't name who's did that.
Let's just say,
I got you back. I got you back with water.
Yeah, payback was a long time in coming. At my work.
Yeah. Right.
All right. Shall we do the Remember When segment?
Let's do it.
Where's the music? There we go. Remember when we have the world's oldest cheese. Now, when I first saw this headline, I flagged it. I thought it said concrete. Take a look at this picture. It looks like concrete. I thought it said...
It looks like they tore a bridge down, and this is one of the bank.
One of the pilings. Yeah. Yeah. I thought it said world's oldest concrete found in ancient tomb was also very dangerous. But no, this is cheese.
Hey, that would also be a valid statement.
Right. Humans have been producing and consuming cheese for a very, very, very long time, as the recent discovery of a 3,200-year-old cheese in an ancient Egyptian tomb attests. Delicious though this cheese may have been, it was also potentially a source of disease. Mm-hmm. I love this cheerful music as you talk about disease.
Yeah. Tell us about it, Chuck.
New research published this week in the science journal Analytical Chemistry describes what is, quote, probably the most ancient archaeological solid residue of cheese ever found to date. In the words of the study's authors, dating back to the 13th century BC, the solidified whitish mass, which could have been a cyst for all we know, was discovered in a jar, and despite 30 centuries of exposure to harsh desert conditions, the compound retained enough of its original chemical content for scientists to study its cheesy origins, and Cheetos were born. In addition to determining the kind of animal milk used to manufacture the cheese, the researchers also detected traces of dangerous bacteria that still plagues us to this very day. The tomb containing the jar of cheese was originally discovered in 1885, but promptly forgotten and subsequently lost after Saharan sands enveloped the archaeological site. Ooh, it was reburied.
So yet another 100 years.
Yeah, what's another 100?
Yeah. Just leave me. What's another 100?
The jar contained ancient cheese was buried along Dummies.
Made you lose your spot, huh?
No. I'm just not good at pronouncing Egyptian names. Thomas? The mayor of the sprawling Egyptian city of Memphis. Hey, that's where Elvis is from. Oh, thank you very much. The capital of Lower Egypt at the time. The site dates back to the 19th dynasty, which ruled over Egypt from 1292 BC to 1189 BC. As a political figure, Thomas was a big deal. In addition to his mayoral duties, he worked as the military chief of staff and oversaw the city's treasury. Upon his death, Thomas' status was elevated to high priest of the god Amun, early Egyptian deity. And as the new study points out, he may have had a thing for cheese. Thing for cheese. Analysis showed the dairy product was produced by mixing milk from goat, sheep, and strangely, African buffalo, a species not typically associated with domestic animals, kept and milked in modern Africa. Didn't know that. That's an interesting little side fact.
That makes sense. It kind of makes sense. It's an African. I mean, I could see, you know, the whole landmass is kind of connected at some point.
But researchers also found a peptide markers consistent with Brucella melitensis, a bacterium that causes brucellosis, which is not to be confused with Brucelli. Oh, is that
Bruce Lee?
Not
see what I got to work with here, people.
All you're hearing is what happens in my mind all the time. Surprising, this cheese was unpasteurized, making it potentially dangerous, albeit tasty food. There you go.
It blew my mind a few years ago. I saw this article that somebody had found 100-year-old cheese. And people were spending lots of money to taste it. It was still good. And apparently you can, from time to time, they do find cheese that old.
Well, remember when we were talking about the Antarctic expedition, they found the case of old whiskey that was over 100 years old. I'm not drinking that.
I would.
And that, alcohol? The alcohol has a better chance of retaining its value, but who knows what got in there or what it tastes like.
That was just it. They were drinking it because it was.
But not
was
cheese. Cheese is controlled spoilage. It's not controlled if it's over 100 years old.
That's what I'm saying. So 100-year-old cheese, I was like, I would like to try it, but it was like way too expensive. But 300 and something, I'll pass.
Probably tastes like especially, the concrete I confused it with.
Especially with the, the hygiene practices that they probably had and circulating around food and stuff. No.
Speaking about practices, we have a guide for proper telephone etiquette. How to make friends by telephone.
And this article is very apt now that we're not talking on the phones as much as we are.
We need to make one like this for texting. Yes.
Yes.
So tell us, what did they have to teach us about telephones from the 1950s?
Okay, so phone calls here in 2018 seem more and more rare. See, they're thinking the same thing I was thinking, especially with younger people. I actually prefer to type. I don't like talking on it as much as I like using it. But most Americans still know basic phone etiquette, like saying hello when you answer the phone. See, that's your protocol that you were talking about earlier.
See,
so it's your the X, you know, the handshake. So when you answer the phone and not hanging up without some kind of goodbye. No, you go first.
You know,
hang up first.
Watch TV. They never say goodbye. There's some unwritten rule in Hollywood script writing that nobody ever says goodbye. Every phone call you watch, it's like, all right. Yep. Okay. We're on it.
Yeah, but you ever have one of those girlfriends? No, you hang up first. I'm not saying goodbye. Anyway, so let's move on. It's something about Hollywood and their 555 numbers. But in case you've forgotten, here's a helpful guide from 1950 that was produced by a phone company, complete with some silly retro advice.
Oh, do tell.
All right, the Hagley Library in Delaware has a digitized version of the 1950s etiquette guide that appears to have been targeted at businesses and has produced and was produced by the Bell Systems. As John Overholt, a curator of Harvard's Houghton. Hey, hello.
That's where Julie went to school in Houghton, Michigan.
Okay. Library points out the booklet tells you to apologize when you've received a call from a wrong number. Now, why would you do that?
What? Apologize?
It's not my fault. It's on you. You called me.
I'm sorry. You got the wrong number.
Okay. So apologize for mistakes. If you receive a wrong number, apologize and hang up gently. It will reflect credit on you to be a pleasant to be pleasant when someone calls you by mistake.
There you go.
Okay, now I'll be honest with you. I have said, okay, no problem. I'm sorry.
I usually ask, what number did you dial to make sure that they have the right information in the first place? There may be a way I can help. If this is a common occurrence, I can say, oh, no, you reached 2072, not 2042. So,
except for when I get one of those calls, hey, we see that you stayed at one of our resorts. No, you must have the wrong number. I want to hang up the phone.
It's funny because it says, hang up gently, but I was listening to John Bell's latest show, and Arnie had a cell phone, and he made it slam the thing. Bing! He slams the handset down.
Oh, boy.
There was a comment about that. What else?
What other tips do they have?
Yeah.
All right. Picture the other person. Okay, this gets a little creepy right off the bat. What are you wearing?
I was just going to say the same thing.
Your conversation will be more personal if you speak to the person on the other end of the line rather than at the telephone. There you go. Okay. Here you go. And when through telephoning,
that's a verb.
I guess when you're done,
telephoning is a verb.
Yeah. In the call gracefully, be sure to thank the other person if he has been helpful and say goodbye so he will know you have finished. And as a parting, thoughtful gesture, please hang up gently.
There's a sign next to the phone, gently, please, like someone ruined it for the rest of us.
Yeah, answer calls promptly. I expect everybody to answer my call. Your conversation is off to a favorable start if you answer promptly. On the first or second ring, I say no to that. You may lose a valuable call if you wait too long to answer.
Okay.
Hmm.
When you're away from your telephone, leave word with the person who will answer your telephone while you are gone. Information as to where you are going and when you expect to return is just another form of courtesy.
Nope.
Say, Janice, I'm going out to have a liquid lunch. I'll be back at 4.
Where's Chuck? He went to lunch. Where'd he go to lunch? Chipotle. When's he coming back? In an hour.
Where'd he go to lunch? Amsterdam.
He went to lunch at Chipotle. He may not be coming back.
Is that a restaurant? No, it's the city Amsterdam. He'll be back in 3 days.
Man. I don't know. I guess some of these have made... I mean, I guess we all have kind of done that stuff. You know, like you said, apologizing. I never really thought about it, saying, I'm sorry, you got the wrong number. And I have said that a million times. But it's a weird thing to do.
As strange as this seems, the telephones were a new form of technology, and people needed instructions to learn them. This was a very good thing to have. Why don't we have something similar today for texting, instant messages? We're in the Wild West. Everybody's using their own kind of schemes and protocols and languages. And
yeah, even on Slack.
Yes.
Everybody, this is funny. Everybody that messaged me, hey, Craig, I'm thinking, okay, brace yourself. Here comes a question.
Is there some unwritten Slack rule that I missed that says you can only write 4 words or less? It comes out like this. Hey, Chuck, enter. Got a question, enter.
Yeah.
Have you taken a look at enter?
I know. Oh, yeah.
What? Can you please? I can read 2 sentences strung together.
I had to turn off notifications for Slack on my watch because people would do that. And we go, all right, forget it. I'm done.
There are some people I just ignore until they get it out of their system.
Yeah.
Like, I see, oh, this came from Jeremy. I'm making up a name to protect the innocent. This came from Jeremy. All right, I'm going to wait for Jeremy because he's going to have at least 4 to 6 alerts. And I'm not going to keep going back to Slack going, he's not done yet. Back to Word. Type. Oh, another alert. He's not done yet. It's like this. Let it get out of his system because it's going to be, otherwise you hear that.
Yeah.
It starts to sound like a Geiger counter.
Just hit enter. you know, sometimes when, I mean, it's nobody's fault really, but whenever I'm dealing with maybe two or more people are invested in the problem I'm trying to solve. Maybe it's an immediate problem.
Yeah.
And they're all three messaging me, and then they're like, not necessarily getting upset, but I'm having to ignore it while I'm working on the problem because I can't stop to answer three people because the problem will persist longer. You know,
hey, like, working on it. I'll let you know when I'm got a status update. Bye.
By the way, Scott, our buddy Scott Tyler, he says, do they have a podcast etiquette?
Yes, it's called Podcasting for Dummies, the companion podcast over at podcastingfordummies.com.
I was going to say, you and T should do an episode on podcast etiquette.
We do.
Answer your voicemails promptly. Hang up gently.
Be courteous. Hang up gently to your podcast voicemail.
That's right.
All right, let's give a quick shout out to our patrons because they are very nice and they've been sending us this money. Oh, I love this. I miss this music. These are the people that donate as little as $1 per show. So if we're not around doing a show, we don't make any money. And in return, we give them special content that's available only to them. Insights to the way we think. We're going to scare people off if we do that. Valuable information. Yes, that's it. Available on our Patreon show. Thank you to Kyle Nishioka, Avner Braverman, Ben Vaughn, Mike Wills, Megapodtastic, Night Gig Studios. Thank you very much to everybody. Gary Lindros, John Clifford, Leon, John Noble.
That John Noble?
Yes, that John Noble. Our John Noble. I'm going to start that. Chris MC, Alexis Duran, Saturday Morning Media, Steve Therian, Jorga Shrawin, and John Miller Jr.
That John Miller Jr.?
That John Miller Jr.
Okay.
The famous, the infamous, more than famous, he's infamous.
He's infamous.
If you want to know more, go to patreon.com/technoramapodcast and we can get you that special content and you can share your love and we will give you a shout out on every single show where you are a contributor. It means so much because this podcast costs some money. We just did a software upgrade. It wasn't cheap, but thanks to you, you helped defray the cost of that. Thank you. Thank you.
By 1/10.
And our renewal for hosting and domain registration and everything is coming up soon, and that ain't cheap either. So thank you very much. Okay, let's fade that out. Tell the 501st. Whoop! Tell them they can go home.
Yeah.
There we go.
Thanks, guys.
And into our last article about this is the Geek Library. Oh, we do have.
I was gonna say, where's the Geek Library music?
There we are.
There we are. Aliens.
All right.
This reminds me,
your turn.
I don't know why this reminded me of that music reminds me of like some
Men in Black.
No, like sort of like a History Channel, like with a History Channel show about aliens or something.
Alien artifacts, alien architecture, alien cooking shows, how to serve man.
How to serve alien. Help him.
Oh, that's my joke. I'm saving it.
All right. So I did not realize at first that somebody was actually doing this by hand because this looks very laborious. A tattoo artist who meticulously inks ASCII art portraits.
Now,
if you thought that the dot matrix printer was painful at doing this, imagine doing this by hand.
Well, that's probably what a tattooist needle, not that I know, feels like, is a dot matrix printer in your soul.
Yeah.
But he
so there's a video on this article, attached to this article. It says the video highlighted the work of tattoo artist Andre Vrontis, who specializes in generating ASCII art portraiture, art made entirely out of traditional computer characters, and painstakingly copying the images to the people's bodies with the help of a tattoo transfer paper. Pretty neat, right? Would you get one, Chuck?
You know, If I were going to do a tattoo, I would do this just for the nerd factor alone. It's beautiful artwork, and yet it's beautiful at a technical level too. That's the thing that I love about this one.
Maybe instead of getting a actual portrait, get just the whole character set, you know, from A to 1 through 10.
You can't do that anymore because you got the ISO 8859 set. That's like infinitely longer.
Yeah. Then you start getting into emojis after that.
No.
All right. So where would you get it at a tattoo parlor? Not get it like on your body, you know. Anyway, so good one. Seriously, though, these prison tats don't. What? Okay. This guy's making a joke in here. Anyway, you can go watch the video and check these out. The guy does a great job at reproducing these on the body. And I don't know, it just seems like it would be even more work than a regular tattoo because you got to go do each individual letter, make it readable. Yeah. So very cool. I suggest you go look at the video if you don't mind a needle sticking people in the skin with ink.
Yeah, because traditionally you'd be, they kind of pull the skin tight and then sort of rub the needle on to get some shading and whatnot. This is every letter. L, G, G.
And I'd have to do this in sessions. I don't know if I could do a whole thing.
It would take quite some time, but it does have a great effect. I mean, you get the depth, you've got the shading. It looks like ASCII art, but when you step back from it, it makes the full image. Question is, what image would you get?
The Mona Lisa. Remember that? That was like, I know we saw it at the Computer History Museum, but that's one of the first ones I saw.
Craig would get the potato Jesus.
In ASCII art format.
It's good artwork turned into bad artwork turned into ASCII artwork. What more could you ask for?
Yeah. No, I remember at the Computer History Museum, we saw the Mona Lisa. That was like one of the first, or no, I think one of the first ASCII art was a little inappropriate for a teenager to see. But
isn't
there
that,
was.
Isn't that one of the fun things about tattoos, though? Is they could be potentially inappropriate?
Yeah. But you know, these things are huge. Anyway.
Maybe that should be our question of the week. What ASCII artwork would you get for a tattoo? But no, we've got this one instead. What is an important lesson a job taught you?
Not to take it.
Keep your mouth shut.
Yeah. Speak when spoken to.
All right.
I don't know. Well, don't ask that for that some raise over the week. Because you screwed up and I'm sorry.
We should be back next week, right? I don't see any reason why we won't be doing our Sunday show.
Oh, yeah, I thought, I think we were planning on that.
And then
so
releasing for a podcast. We will be going to DragonCon a little earlier this year, although you'll still probably be showing up on Thursday, you said, right?
Well, I'll let you know soon.
Okay, Scott and I will be there Wednesday night. I have my Southwest drink coupons all ready.
Yeah. Okay.
I got to
get the party started on the way.
A little easier this year than last year. That was a bit rough last year. We'll see.
Yeah, you had some trouble getting there, didn't you?
No. I've had lots of travel trouble in August and July anyway, but that's a different story. So we will see you then. I think we are ready to sign out. What do you say?
Still got a podcast to record.
We still got another show for the Patreons to record. Right. We've got a Topic is Trek to record on Wednesday. We are busy, busy people, and there's still work to be done.
It's the season of podcasts.
Craig and I do have day jobs. We happen to work.
Oh, and don't forget about the Dog Days of Podcasting.
Dog Days of Podcasting, yep.
Been listening, go catch up at Dog Days of Podcasting.
How many shows do we have? Do you know, real quick? How many episodes have been posted? It's got to be 300 by now.
It's 318.
Oh, I wasn't even counting. Wow. All right. Until next time, you can find out more information about us over at chuckchat.com/technorama. Call us on the listener line. It's all over there how you can get in touch with us. Until then, tell a friend about Technorama. And as always, give us a big binary high five, Craig.
101. Binary is a Vulcan high five for you, too.